Owen, to ICANN's RDAP for GTLD Registries and Registrars webinar. My name is Angelina, from the Global Domains Division, and I will be moderating today's webinar and the Adobe Connect chat room. Before we begin, I'd like to remind everyone to follow the ICANN's Expect Standards of Behavior. You can find the link explaining this in the Adobe Connect room. If you haven't already, I'd like to remind you to please mute your computers and phones. To facilitate global participation, we are providing interpretation services in Arabic, Chinese, French, Russian, and Spanish. Today's webinar will last approximately 60 minutes, including a Q&A session at the end. This webinar is being recorded in English. Links to the recording and webinar materials will be posted on the ICANN RDAP section of our website. We will address questions at the conclusion of the webinar's presentation. You may type your question at any time simply by typing the word question at the beginning and end of your question. Please also include your name, affiliation, along with the question in the Adobe Connect chat room box. I'd like to take a moment to welcome all of you and let you know today's webinar presenter is Eduardo Alvarez, Technical Services Senior Manager from ICANN's Global Domains Division Technical Services Group. Again, if you have not, please mute your computers and phones. Now I'll hand it over to Eduardo.
Thank you, Angelina. Hello, everyone. Thanks for joining us today. We're about to get started on the webinar. The title is RDAP for GTLD Registries and Registrars. We intend to go on a very brief summary of considerations that we want to share with the implementers of the RDAP service. So here's a quick summary of the agenda that we plan to, the topics we plan to cover. We're going to start with a brief introduction of RDAP. Then we're going to move on to considerations that both registries and registrars should be aware of and consider in their implementations. Then we're going to move on to registry-specific considerations and then registrar-specific considerations. Once we cover these, we expect to take about 30 minutes, and then we're going to have another 30 minutes for a Q&A session. So let's begin. To introduce the topic, we've shared before some of the issues that we see in today's GUI service that we have. Some of these, as we see in the screen, is the standard internationalization of content. For example, recently to address some of these issues, we have some policy documents that have been developed, like to address a consistent labeling and display of GUI's responses. Additionally, we also have issues with search support, so GUI only has support for lookup of data, not search. There is no redirection or reference of responses. For example, when a query for the registry data, there's no redirection to the GUI service of a registrar. There's also a lack of a standardized way of knowing the server of the authoritative data for domain name data. For GTLDs, we have a predefined domain name, which is whois.nic.tld for the service. But in general, this is not a standard way of doing whois queries. And it also can be considered to be an insecure service. There's no way to authenticate that the response received comes from the server that was queried or that the contents of that response have not been modified. Okay. So that brings us to RDAP features that address these issues. So RDAP, as we see here, is a protocol designed in the IETF. We have the reference to the RFCs that define this protocol. And then it includes some of these benefits that address the issues that we just saw. So the query and response error messages are standardized. It also supports secure access to the data because this is a web access, it can be done over HTTPS. It also offers extensibility functionality, meaning that it allows to add additional data elements to responses. Also, it enables or has support for differentiated access. The support for authentication that we were talking about earlier can be implemented in an RDAP service. This also addresses the issues where we can differentiate from public data and data that is only available to authenticated users. To address the issue of finding authoritative servers, we also have a bootstrapping mechanism to easily find the server where the domain name data is hosted. We also have support for the redirection or reference mechanism to cover this use case where a registry can indicate an end user the server that a registry hosts to provide authoritative data for that domain name. It's built on top of HTTP, which is a well-known web protocol. It also has internationalization support for registration data, meaning that we can provide registration data in different languages and localization. And it also enables a search for objects, which is defined in the RFCs that we mentioned before. So looking at the chronology of the RDAP implementation, it goes back to September 2011, where the ESACS report 51 suggested that the ICANN community should evaluate adoption and replacement of the domain name registration data access protocols, meaning from WHOIS, or back then WHOIS. On October 2011, adopted the report. Almost a year later, June 2012, the roadmap to implement ESACS report was published, and after March 2015, the RFCs were published related to RDAP in the IETF working groups. Later in June, work began to build the GTLD RDAP profile map policy requirements to the RDAP features. In July 2015, the first version of the RDAP profile published. A request for reconsideration letter was received from the registry stakeholder group regarding the inclusion of the consistent labeling and display policy in this RDAP profile, among other requests. And then on February 1st, 2017, a revised consistent labeling and display policy removing the RDAP requirement was published. On August 1st, 2017, ICANN received a proposal from the registry stakeholder group supported by the registrar stakeholder group to implement RDAP, which was accepted by ICANN in September, a month later, and the RDAP pilot started. More recently, on May 25th of 2018, the temporary specification for GTLD registration data was calling for registries and registrar to implement RDAP following a common profile, SLA, and registry reporting requirements. On August 2018, there was a proposed GTLD RDAP profile published for public comment. And then on February 27 this year, final GTLD RDAP profile was published, and the ICANN organization issued a notice to contracted parties to implement RDAP. Then later this year, August 26, 2019, that's the deadline for implementation of the RDAP service for GTLD registries and registrars that we have to keep in mind. As we mentioned before, in terms of implementation status, So we have the call to GTLD registers and registrars to implement the RDAP service. It needs to follow, according to the temporary specification, it needs to follow a common GTLD RDAP profile. It needs to be subject to defined SLAs and also comply with registry reporting requirements. Regarding these two last items, SLAs and registry reporting requirements, the ICANN organization and the contracted parties are still working on finalizing such requirements. It's not something that's available yet. However, for implementing the RDAP service, we do have the August 26, 2019 deadline. So considerations that are applicable for both registries and registrars. Of course, we have a very important deadline that we just discussed. August 26 is what's currently in the timeline. We're going to be referencing the published GTLD RDAP profile, which can be found in the link shown in the slide. So this RDAP profile, as we saw in the timeline before, was created working with a group of GTLD registries and registrars working with ICANN. It consists of two documents. It's the RDAP Technical Implementation Guide, which aims to provide technical instructions to registries and registrars on how to implement their RDAP service, and also the RDAP Response Profile document that intends to map current policy requirements to the RDAP implementation with the flexibility to incorporate future policy changes with the expectation that minimal re-engineering will be needed. Currently, the ICANN organization is recommending GTLD registries and registrars to implement their RDAP service based on the guidance that's included in these two RDAP profile documents that are published. So regarding IPv6 and IPv4 transport, we see the technical implementation guide from the RDAP profile that states that services must be available over both IPv4 and IPv6. So that's something that people need to keep in mind, that their RDAP server is resolving both of these transports. TLS servers are ticket anchoring. So this is the recommendation is that it's a HTTPS only service. So make sure to take in consideration the best practices found in RFC 7525, which is the recommendations for security of transport layer security, or TLS. It is also recommended that the TLS certificate used for the RDAP service is also issued by a well-known CA or using DANE or DNS-based authentication of name entities. This is also coming from a recommendation found within the technical implementation guide of the RDAP profile. In terms of DNSSEC, the RDAP profile is also recommending to have DNSSEC sign a name, domain name for the RDAP service. So that's another thing to consider when in your implementation. Make sure that the chain of trust is validated all the way from the root servers to your RDAP servers. In terms of the response of RDAP queries for domain names, the RDAP response profile also requires that the DNSSEC element is included. It's called a secure DNS member in the RDAP response, must be included in the RDAP response. That's where registries and registrars can signal if this is a signed delegation or if this is unsigned. This is mapped from existing policy requirements that we also have in QIS. However, it also allows you to both registries and registrars to specify the complete set of DNSSEC parameters we have, among other information, we have the signature life, the DS data, key data, that needs that can be considered, and according to the profile, we can see that it's recommended to be included if it is available to the service operator. Moving on to addresses, when adding contact information, the topic of country codes instead of country names of responses has come up in the past. So the existing vCard element or the vCard standard defines that the address element includes the full country name, whereas in QIS currently we're requiring registries and registrars to include the country code from the ISO 31661 alpha 2. Right now there is ongoing work to get a new parameter registered to support adding the country code in the RDAP response. However, this is not yet finalized. So the main takeaway would be that before this new parameter is available, registers and registrars may populate the address structure with the country code instead of the country name. And once this new parameter is made available, then the country name component must be then updated to be empty, and then use the country code parameter accordingly. In terms of internationalized domain name query support, so one of the main features of RDAP is supporting internationalization. From the technical implementation guide, the requirement is that the RDAP server must support lookup queries using both A labels and U labels when receiving queries for domain names and name servers. Cross-origin resource sharing. So for in this, there's also the requirement for responding. I'm going to take a pause because I think there's someone else in the line. We'll resume in 1 second.
我们一会儿再回来。
Okay, I think we got it. Just as a brief reminder, we ask participants to please mute their phones and computers. Going back to the cross-origin resource sharing topic, RDAP supports web clients to query data from different RDAP servers, depending on the data that's being queried. For this to work, RDAP servers must include the response header called access control allow origin, and unless there's a different indication, a value of a wildcard or a star must be used. This means basically that the RDAP server will be accepting queries from different sources and not just directly to the RDAP server when done via a web client through a browser. Redaction requirements, so the considerations from the temporary specification apply to RDAP. The response profile has has guidance on how redaction is expected to happen in RDAP, in the fields in RDAP. There are still some moving parts based on the EPDP final report, so there are still a few changes that are likely to be required in the future based on the outcome of this report. So it's going to be something that we'll need to keep track of going forward. But in the meantime, there is already some guidance in the RDAP profile that needs to be considered. Moving on to items that pertain to registry. The registry are a based URL. The bootstrapping mechanism we spoke about as one of the RDAP features is based on an IANA registry that is public. So registries should make sure that their RDAP based URL is registered in this registry. It basically indicates for each of the top level domains where the authoritative RDAP server is. The process to register their RDAP servers is the same as the process that registries use to update their delegation information. They can use the Routesone management system. It is actually recommended. However, there are other ways to go about it, which are published and maintained by IANA. We encourage you to take a look at their website and review this process. Regarding the reference mechanism, the implementation, a technical implementation guide also requires registries to provide a link when doing domain queries. In the response, a link should be provided to the sponsoring registrar's RDAP server so that end users and web clients know where to go if they're interested in querying this information directly from the registrars. For this purpose, there was also a request that came up from the RDAP working group. ICANN was asked to set up a temporary repository to publish the registrar's RDAP-based URLs, and this is expected to be published in the URL shown in the screen right now, which is the current registry that lists accredited registrars and their IANA IDs. This will enable registries to find the base
URL.
We're going to make a small pass again. There's some on the line. Okay, my apologies. I think we've taken this again. Okay, so let's resume. We were talking about where to find the registrar's base URLs. So these are expected to be added sometime around May 2019. It's going to be added to the existing IANA registry where we have the registrar IANA IDs, and this will enable registries to retrieve these URLs from registrars and include the references in their domain name lookup responses. Moving on to considerations applicable to registrars. So as a result, in order to have the central repository be available, we need a registrar to provide their URL. Expected to happen through the self-service field at their system that registrars, accredited registrars currently use. It is expected that the functionality will be available during April this month. Registrars will receive a notification via emails shortly with instructions on how to provide this information to ICANN. That's something that well, please expect that communication and make sure to follow the instructions. Regarding contact handles, so the RDAP profile defines that entity handles or for contacts should be the repository object identifier or row ID of the contact object. However, theme registrations in certain TLDs don't have contact objects in the registry level, and they live in the registrars. In this case, because there's no existing row ID for the contacts, the registrars are expected to use their own unique identifier that they have locally for these contact objects. More information on this requirement can be seen on the response profile. Regarding domain names that are not sponsored by the query registrar, the expectation or the requirement is that HTTP code 404 should be returned, which signals that the domain name information is not available in the queried server. So regardless of the domain name existing in the registrar, and the registrar may be sponsored by different registrars, if the queried registrar is not the sponsoring registrar for the domain name, the HTTP 404 response is expected. Finally, we'd want to share a few resources. Some implementations that are available online. We have open source RDAP server projects, DNS Belgium. You can find the link here in the slides, and Red Dog. There are also several RDAP clients. Most are web-based. We have a prototype hosted by Viagini that was implemented by ICANN. We have code and web client from an implementation by CentralNIC. DNS Belgium as well has their own client implementation, NIC Info, and OpenRDAP is also a good resource. With that, I think we're ready to take some of the questions. We'll be addressing whatever we receive in the chat window and also open the floor for discussion. I'm going to hand it over to Angelina to facilitate this.
Thank you. So our first question came in from Michael Balland from SIP. His question is, where do I put the last update of RDAP database event for search results? Should every single object have the same date, or should there be an event at the root level?
Thank you. This is Eduardo again. So a response for RDAP search results, the format is defined within the RDAP RFCs, in particular RFC 7483. It's stated that the response for this search includes the array of domain objects for the search, and then within the array, each object would include the corresponding events element that must include the last update date of the RDAP database, meaning that this event is based on the object class object and not really a one-time element that must be found in the response.
The next question also came in from Michael Balland of SIP. I only saw links to domain name objects in domain name queries. See temp implementation 3.2. Are those links not required for other objects like contacts or name servers? So if I query a domain and show the connected contacts and name server, I do not add direct links to those objects?
Thank you. So, well, in particular, the technical implementation guide in this section 3.2, it speaks about the links object and the relationship type of related links for domain lookup responses, and that only is applicable for domain name lookup responses, not the other objects. However, if this question means or intends to address the link object in general, we also have referred to RFC 7483 for the specification on links in section 5, which means that every object class should still include their own link, at least the link with the URI for the self for itself or the same object. That's also one of the considerations that needs to be included in the RDAP service. But it depends on what this question was targeting. So if it's about specifically the technical implementation guide section 3.2, this is just for domain lookup responses. But if it's regarding the links object in general, we should follow Section 5 of the RFC.
Our next question is, how do I distinguish between localized and international contact addresses? Do I use two vCard objects in a single contact?
Hi, this is Francisco. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can, Francisco. Thank you.
Okay, so this came in writing before the webinar, so I'm not sure Michael is here, but I interpret this question to be referring to the data, the contact data submitted by the registrant, for example, in Chinese or Arabic, versus an address that is transformed, for example, being translated to English or transliterated to Latin script by the registrar or the registry. If this is what is meant in this question, then this is an issue that is still to be addressed by the translation and transliteration policy implementation. This is a policy recommendation was adopted by the board a couple years ago, I believe, and the implementation is pending having an RDAP solution in place, given that WHIS does not support internationalization. I'm afraid the current version of the GTD RDAP profile, as I understand it, does not consider having multiple versions of contact data, so this is not possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Francisco. We're still on the line. If there are people that have questions, you can type them into the chat box. I see someone has raised their hand. Is it possible for you to type into the chat box, please? Okay, we have a question coming in. For registries that have searchable WHOIS as a requirement in Exhibit A of their RA, we will no longer be required to provide this after implementation of RDAP?
This is Francisco. I believe the temp spec calls for says something to the effect that registries or registrars that have requirements to offer searchable WHOIS, for example, those registries that have a requirement to offer searchable WHOIS in their Exhibit A, they are required to offer searchability in RDAP. So you may want to refer to the temp spec in that regard.
Thank you, Francisco. Our next question comes from, Leanne of GMO. For registries that have searchable, Feng Min, question is, any requirement for registrar's RDAP URL?
This is Eduardo. The only requirement that we're asking is that it's offered through HTTPS, not HTTP. And as we mentioned before, this transport should be should consider IPv4 and IPv6. And of course, based on the notification that registrar should receive shortly, later this month, they should register their URL with ICANN using Radar's self-service field.
Thank you. Our next question is from Gao. Is there also an SLA monitoring service available for RDAP?
This is Francisco. I can take this one. So we are planning to update the existing ICANN SLA monitoring system to monitor RDAP. But to be clear, there is still some work that needs to happen between ICANN and the contract parties in order to formalize an SLA for RDAP. So what we are planning to do there is to start monitoring RDAP and offer that as helpful information to the contract parties, for example, through the most happy, the API that allows contract parties to see the data we see in the SLA monitoring system, so that contract parties can see what we are seeing in regards to their service. Thank you.
Thank you. We have another follow-up question from Gao. Are there any particular suggestions to implement GDPR in RDAP?
I believe that would be beyond my pay grade and my area of expertise. Sorry.
Okay, our next question is from Guy Binsky, Google Registry. The abuse contact for a domain has moved to the registrar sub-entity. Can we still give a shortened registrar entity without the abuse of any other contact with self-link to the full registrar? Or do we have to have the abuse already inside the domain response?
Hi, this is Eduardo. So we can refer to the RDAP response profile. We have a section on the abuse contact where an entity must be included with the abuse role specifically within the registrar entity that must be included with the phone and emails. Those in the response, these are considered to be required in the RDAP response profile.
That is all we have for questions. We can wait a few more minutes if there are other questions that are going to come in. There's somebody by the name of Shuoye, S-H-U-O-Y-E. I see you've raised your hand. If you could type your question in the chat box, we can answer. This message is from Guy Binsky, and thank you for following the standards for the questions. It's very helpful. It's a follow-up. Do we need the abuse contact inside each domain search results array as well, or only for a specific domain search?
This is Eduardo again. Hi, Guy. So because the domain search results it's an array of domain object classes elements. Each of the domain objects that are found in the response should comply with the normal response for a domain name lookup. So we would include the registrar with the abuse contact in each one.
And he clarified that. I mean specific domain query.
Yep. Thank you for your question.
Okay, thank you everybody for participating. We're going to conclude this webinar. If you have questions later on, you may email them to globalsupport@icann.org. Thank you very much. Goodbye.